When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
I'm looking forward to this as well. This has been a long time coming for me.
There's been a lot of turmoil and bizarre reasons why it didn't happen. And it's nice that it is happening.
We're here. First things first, first order of business. Have you seen The Dirt?
God, everyone that I've seen today has said the same thing.
Have they really?
Yeah, of course.
Fuck's sake, what an unoriginal start.
Of course it did.
And yeah. Thoughts?
I thought it was exactly like I thought it was going to be. Without the... you know, the more controversial parts of the book.
Which did you feel they left out?
Well, Tommy Lee got to prison for domestic abuse.
Yep. Yeah, they had the bit where he hits the girl on the bus, but that's obviously not his wife and not to the same extent.
The whole Pamela Anderson thing, I was surprised they missed that out. Surely
he was the
most important or the most famous member of Motley Crue at that point.
Yeah.
Being as he was the only one that was in the news. But they missed out the bit where Vince got fat.
Didn't they? They certainly did.
You know, I'd like to have found out how a skinny guy got that fat. that's interesting.
Well, I guess it would probably be something to do with the grief, right? And the pain of what happened to his daughter. Because that is, without a doubt, one of the darkest things that can happen to a human being, isn't it? To lose a child at that age.
Well, yeah, and the guilt of not going to jail for killing Russell.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't underestimate how much of an effect that must have. If you know that you and your money can, you know, get you around the law, that's on a young man's psyche, what sort of effect must that have? It certainly puts you in a different world than the rest of us, you know, and... you know, in the rest of us, if you don't want to be a gut, you've got to stop eating burgers and drinking beer for a while. I don't know. I'm not a mad fan of Motley Crue. I can't imagine
you would be.
I liked the first album.
Yeah.
I did like...
Livewire and all the early stuff.
I did like when they came out and they were mixing a few different elements no one else was doing. And there was a bit of Kiss in there and a bit of Black Sabbath. And I thought, that's interesting. And it was a real cranky sounding record, that first one. That I thought was good as well, because, you know, there was a sound that rock bands had that first album didn't sound anything like that.
No.
And I like garagey sounding records. I like rough sounding records, as you can probably gather from our new latest Wild Hearts record.
And many previous Wild Heart records
I like records that, you know, grab you by the scruff of the neck. I'm not a big fan of posh productions, posh mixings. You know, posh established rock norms within the world of sound. But I don't know. That first album just had a charm that none of the rest had. Well, I haven't heard them all, but the second one certainly didn't have that charm.
I think it wasn't
a very good record, was it?
No, and certainly not the one after that, Theatre of Pain.
Oh, that was fucking dreadful, that one. But the thing is, I've got a soft spot for Motley Crue just because they were you know, causing trouble and having fun. And I, you know, until it got to the point where they were rich and then they were kind of just, you know,
above
it was costing
the law.
People's lives.
Yeah.
That's when it just, you know, the kind of honeymoon period was gone for me.
There's definitely a few, I think, for me, similarities. One being the obvious that I guess both yourself and Nikki Sixx were clearly very influenced by Sweet. And I think, you know, you said to me before in an interview that you turned on Top of the Pops one night and they were playing on that and there was a moment with a sticker on a guitar or something where you were like, what is this?
I knew that before that point, I knew that I loved music, but it wasn't until I saw that I realised the division between me and my parents as far as what we thought of what was going on the telly, that I realised, this is actually... I'm standing up for myself here. I'm liking something my parents don't like. I'd never done that before, 8 years old, whatever I was. And I remember them, and I remember, you know, them saying, oh, this is absolutely rubbish. And I was going, I like it. And I'm like,
And that's kind of the crux of rock and roll, isn't it? Is music that your parents hate.
Well, it's
that's
definitely...
That's when you find your own identity, isn't it?
It's for a musician, that's really when the touch paper's lit.
Yeah.
Is that, you know, that... extension of your own identity that your parents don't often see. You know, they're trying to kind of, at that point, restrict your identity from developing by, you're still a child, you're still a baby. And at that point, you know, 8, 10 years old, you're not a baby. You're starting to think things laterally. And as soon as I saw that performance, I thought, I'm going to do that. That's exactly what I'm going to do. And you know, from my little 8-year-old brain, and never went away, not for one day, not even now. You know, that decision that I made at that moment is still what, you know, my manifesto to this day.
You still got that excitement of a child when it comes to making music.
Absolutely. I couldn't make music if it didn't excite me. I couldn't, you know, I just couldn't. There's nothing in it for me. I, to see a project, like making an album through to the end, it's a laborious process. And I'm not very good with boredom.
Yeah, yeah.
So
Fast-moving mind.
Yeah, and just too many other things that you could be doing.
Yeah.
Instead of labouring over something that you're not really that into. But I always like to push things. Scott Walker, you know, bless him, R.I.P., was big for that in my life because... You know, the Walker Brothers were quite a big thing when I was little, and then they started going a little bit more avant-garde and a bit more Baroque, and then he turned into Scott Walker, the solo artist, and then no one knew what the hell he was doing. And that informed me such a massive level that he was the first fearless artist without any thought of the commercial aspect of what he was doing or the potential commercial aspect of what he was doing, being as he was just a huge... gorgeous pop star. It wasn't like he was just being thrust into a world we didn't know. He was Robbie Williams of his time or whatever.
Yeah, yeah, completely.
And then he just went, no, I'm just going to hit sides of beef in the studio and sing
get
about
big drums and just rub them round in circles on big tables. And, you know, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And the world's going like, are you all right? You know what I mean? Do you not want loads of money? I'm like, no, not interested in all of that. And that's been my, you know, the way I do things. Art has always been, you know, a different sport than the commerce.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
I've got no interest whatsoever in the commercial aspect of making art. And, you know, it sounds a bit wanky, a rock musician talking about making art, but I do think of what I do is like, it's a statement I've got to get out on my system to be able to breathe properly. Otherwise, this thing's going to follow me around like a fucking tumour. And I've just since recording the Wild Arts album, I wrote and recorded another album that I've still yet to finish.
Of course you did.
And it's driving me nuts because I can't. I've got a tattoo on my back that's not finished. That drives me nuts on a daily basis. I hate unfinished business, hate it. So it's an interesting thing making music, you know. But if it's not something that it's pulling something scary out, you know, if you're not swimming into those weird choppy waters, you're not completely sure you're going to be able to navigate, you ain't doing anything. All you're doing is kind of, well, you know,
clocking in and out.
I've done this before, it's easy. I want to know that I could possibly fuck everything up at any second. That's what makes me moist.
A little bit of fear goes a long way.
It's all about the fear. Ever since you were a little kid, jumping on that swing that was on a tree, that, you know, at some point that rope was going to snap, but you were going out across, over a big cliff and into certain death if it snapped. And then you go by a week later and the rope snapped. What the hell happened there? But we'd be on that swing. We're like, you know, 10 or 12 of us clinging on, you know. And, you know, you'd be lying if you said there was no fear when you were little. Fear was the thing that motivated you to do it. Fear was the kind of, you know, the rite of passage-ness about it, you know, that leap from being a boy to a bit of an unhinged boy that would be the unhinged man. That still follows me around. Everything that I do, I want it to be at least interesting for me. And the commercial aspect, you've got no guarantee that, you know, the most commercial thing is going to work anywhere. And then you've got things like Nirvana, who just going boom, as big as the Beatles. Who the fuck saw that coming?
Yeah, I think if you try and chase it, you're never going to create something that stands the test of time. But sometimes, really occasionally, artists that are that radical somehow just have the right sound at the right time, don't they? And it just explodes for them.
And I believe
that. But never
that.
Lasts, or very rarely lasts.
I believe that. To the point where now I still believe that the Wild Hearts could be the first band of unknown kind of guys in their 50s that actually people go, oh, I like this. And it just, you know, I know Motorhead had a dip in the 90s and then kind of resurfaced, yeah, and had another kind of renaissance period. So I still believe that, you know, people might not just look at this band and go, like, that is such a weird concept. One of them's got one fucking leg. I'm buying the record.
Well, it's almost like a Motley Crue thing as well, because I think that book, first of all, The Dirt for them, gave them a real resurgence. And there's another similarity for me between the Wild Hearts and the Motley Crue guys, in the sense that you've come through so much, like depression, drugs, fights, wars of record labels. Like, there's a lot of warfare similarity, and you've come through it on the other side. And do you think that anybody would have guessed, say a few years ago, that the Earth versus Wild Hearts lineup would not only reform for a tour celebrating the album, but that then that would lead into a whole new record?
No.
After everything that you've all been through collectively and individually,
none of us would have thought. I mean, God, but Danny coming back from the dead, and, you know, but initially when we were doing the Brit Rock tour, he was the kind of the concern. Is he going to be all right? Is he going to do this? And now he's almost the mascot. And, you know, he's the guy that, you know, he plays such a big part in the band. I've given up trying to second guess the future. It's like, I just know that I haven't got a clue. And then that's a good premise to work on, I think. You know, you know, and it stops you being disappointed as well, which is the most important thing about not having a clue.
Yeah, if you don't have expectation.
Oh, yeah. Anticlimax sounds like a fucking rotten time. I'm not interested in anticlimax at all, you know. And the Wild Arts, fucking every gig that we do is a massive success, because we just look at each other sometimes in the dressing room and just laugh. How did none of us die? And it wasn't like a Motley Crue story where we had like some rags to riches to trade off. We didn't have any riches.
Yeah, yeah. You couldn't buy your way out of the trouble you got yourself in.
Yeah, we would run out of drugs because we ran out of money. And that was always the Wild Arts thing, was like when it was dark with the Wild Arts, it was really dark, because it was, you know, proper working class dark. It wasn't Hollywood dark.
Yeah. It wasn't rehab.
It wasn't Valley of the Dolls. It wasn't rehab and stuff. It was like, you know, just broken down families and, you know, just tons of worry about people. And then really ugly fallouts, you know, the good news is that, you know, we're all speaking now. It's the most important thing. That's all that matters. All that matters.
Well, and not only not just speaking, but, you know, making art and music again together. How was that experience for the four of you to reconnect in that way?
Well, it was essential, really, because we went in there knowing what sort of album we didn't want to make. I had no interest in making. Especially with such a fucked up political climate as there is now, it was like, we need to make an album that sounds like a live album. It's raw as fuck. It's exactly what we think when we listen to the Wild Hearts in our head. And you put the record on, you go, oh, it's a bit overproduced. There's a bit too many guitar overdubs, and there's a keyboard here, and too many harmonies there. And we're like, just get rid of all of that. If we can't do it on stage, don't do it on the album, on this album. You know, so CG was given one track of guitar. Danny had one track of bass. I had one track of guitar. Same with the vocals. There's no massive double tracking or anything like that. And everyone who's heard the album says that how raw it is almost what makes it attractive. But in a political climate like now, how could you not make a raw album? How could you not be pissed off and affected by that? And if that doesn't come through in your music, then you know, you're irrelevant, really. No matter how successful you are, you're not actually singing anything true to yourself and true to your heart.
Or true to the times, yeah.
Well, I mean, it all depends. Again, it's relative, because it depends on what sort of upbringing you've grew up with. You know, if you've been brought up, you know, spoiled or in Hollywood. I don't suppose political climate really affects you that much, because you can probably buy your way out of it. But if you've grown up with, you know, your family's miners, and you've seen the Tories tear down all the mines and the shipyards, and they've already done it once, and then they're doing the whole thing again, tearing apart what's left of the remnants of communities, being like, you know, stopping funding for mental health, not even research, mental health, not even education, mental health treatment. So all the lower middle class people are fleeing to the private sector to try and get seen. So now the private sector is turning people away, and you're just like, this is fucking chaos. And there's people dying all the time, thousands of them every year. No one cares. If that doesn't affect your music, you're technically not a musician. You're just a pawn. You're just an actor. You're playing at being a musician. And, you know, good luck to you. It seems to be quite the thing, you know.
It does, doesn't it?
People do quite well, pretending.
A couple of questions I want to ask you. Is a book something on the cards for the Wild Hearts?
I was going to do a book with Mick Wall, and then they started booking gigs to promote it before we wrote the book. And I'm just like, right.
So now I've got to get writing really quick, yeah.
And also, it might not be a good book, and we won't have any time to rewrite. So I put it to someone else that we'd do a Wild Arts book, and they said, there's no interest, you're a cult band, no one buys books anymore. I was pointing, I'm just like, really? Does anyone fancy doing anything to try and make books exciting again, or anything? And I guess, you can't make people work for something if, you know, evolution means that thing's not going to last. You know, you don't see people riding around on horses anymore, do you?
True, but that's a story that needs to be documented and needs to be told, because I mean, I saw the Songs and Words tour that you did, and that's obviously just your tales, and the Wild Hearts is a collective, and there must be the wealth of material. And
there's it's a great story, but unless it was done properly, we were talking about this earlier on about the idea of doing a documentary. Someone mentioned that they'd rather do a DVD than a book, and I'm like, well, great, but give me the treatment. I'm just going to go and jump into the idea of making a movie about the Wild Hearts, unless there's a really good angle that I think you can get some juicy stuff out of this you wouldn't get from another band or from any other band. Like, for me, it would be the Wild Hearts fans. That would be the main brunt of the story, how it affects other people. It's that's not very common, the way that Wild Hearts fans are. You know yourself, they're a bit eager.
Yeah.
They're a bit zealous.
And they really kind of, I think, have allowed you in some cases to continue making music when the music industry's sort of closed the door, right?
Absolutely. And, you know, Beyond Pledge and all those sort of things, the fans were the community, I'd rather call it, were there for the 555 thing, but time and time again, the stuff that we're doing now. You know, Round Records, they want us to do well. They want Round Records to do well. So they invest in this stuff. And it's and so we try and make it really good quality, and it's a copacetic relationship. But that's the community that we've been nurturing. That relationship's what we've been nurturing over the years. When everyone else, when other people have been trying to figure out the best way of just making some
money. Just making a quick buck, yeah.
Yeah, I'm trying to think the best way of, you know, having something worthwhile that actually means something to anyone. So whatever you're doing, regardless of how financially beneficial everything is you're having an emotional impact.
Yeah.
That's where the calling it art makes sense, because it's eliciting some kind of emotional response. And the wild arts do not elicit an emotional response from people. My God, it's crazy.
What were you telling me once? You were speaking to a venue, either manager or promoter, and they were saying you're the only band nowadays that inspires the kind of response that you see at football matches in terms of the chanting and the singing.
Yeah.
Like proper fever pitch reaction.
But I mean, that was what I grew up thinking was how
all bands
was done. All bands. Thin Lizzy. Everyone used to sing to Thin Lizzy.
Motorhead, yeah, AC/DC,
just like, as soon as the lights went off, everyone went from talking to everything to mental. Everyone got plugged into some grid and all just lost their shit until Motorhead stopped playing and the lights went back on. And it was something that I never really thought, well, or Ramones.
Ramones,
even
great
better,
example, yeah.
Pulling everybody
half the set length as well,
but it was about the audience. Even though it was about the band and stuff, but it was just as much about the audience, about, you know, that community spirit in the audience, especially Ramones audience. Every single weirdo in every single city that they played was at a Ramones gig, and you go like, oh my God, I'm home.
Yeah.
Is it like every kind of weirdo? I mean, little nerdy, geeky weirdos and fucking 6 foot monster weirdos. Everything. And we entered into the Wild Arts thinking that that's just what you do. And I didn't realise how special it was that we got that back from the people until a bit later on, when I'd see people kind of clocking in and clocking out, doing substandard performances, releasing substandard material, and the audience kind of going cold on them. And you could see before the audience, you know, moved on to another band or something, you could feel it in the crowd that it wasn't the same electricity. And there was no way I was going to ever let that happen. What, for just for success, just to write shitty songs and make shitty videos and do stupid things, write crap songs for other people and disappoint everyone. Man, you know, I struggle with a lot of stuff these days, but that must be a hard one. To think if I could go back, I would go back and try and salvage some integrity. Like if Gene Simmons is sitting on the toilet just going like, oh, if I could
what
have
was
anything,
it all for?
I would have had some integrity left at this age. So when I'm old, I could be proud instead of just, I made a lot of money. So do porn directors. Money, you know? Move guns around if you want to make a load of money, if that's all it's about for
yeah, he's
you.
In the wrong business now.
Really? I know, and that's going
to
be
he's such
awful.
An interesting character, though, isn't he? Because I think he's got a really good heart deep down, and I think you hear certain stuff about him, and you think, well, where's that guy in the public? Like, why don't we see more of that person?
Well, I know a few people like that put on a persona when they're doing their kind of promotional thing. And I'm always like, is that working for you?
Yeah, yeah, they're running on the whole there's no such thing as bad publicity angle, aren't they? But you are like, is that working?
And this this is a competition. If you're just going to be, you know, Lon Chaney and pulling 1,000 faces for whoever you're talking to, you know, chances are you're not going to, your effect's not going to last very long. It may burn bright at the time, but it's not going to last very long. You're not going to be an essential character like someone with flaws, like an Ozzy or a Lemmy or something like that, where people can identify with them. I don't just want someone showing off. I like someone who can show off. I have someone who's got something to bring to the table. That's sexy. But someone who just makes it a point of their existence to show off.
Yeah. That's shocking.
That's the annoying kid in class that's definitely going to get his ass kicked.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know it. And these guys are too rich to get their ass kicked. But, you're telling me Donald Trump's happy? You know? And, you know, as nice as I suspect Gene Simmons probably is, and he stopped me getting a beating once, you know, and I'll always give him props for that.
Did he? What was going on there then?
Well, I was a little kid, and we went to see Kiss at Stafford Bingley Hall, and the car came, and there was a window open. It was Gene Simmons. I thought, I'm probably never going to get a chance to meet him again. So I ran into the car park after the car, and all of the security from upstairs ran after me. And I'm like, I hope it's Gene Simmons, because if some rich, grey-haired guy gets out of that car, I'm screwed. And Gene Simmons got out the car, and all security, I you could hear the feet coming behind me, getting louder and louder. And then out the other side of the car was that huge guy that was in all the Kiss pictures with the big handlebar moustache. Don't know what he was called, big guy. And he got this guy to go and, you know, tell him to clear off. And he talked to me for a bit, signed something, took some pictures and stuff, and then walked me back up the thing, make sure I didn't get my arse kicked. And I remember trying to tell him this story where the Wild Arts was going, and we were at a Kiss gig, and they didn't like Kiss, and I did, me and CG did. And I was trying to tell him this story in front of everyone, and he turned around and went, this is going to take a long time. And he looked at the band for reassurance, and they all just went, cunt, fuck off. And you just, and he was saying, then he called me the troublemaker for a while. And I just remember thinking, I wasn't causing trouble. I was trying to tell you a story that you were going to go to bed that night and go,
maybe I am a good guy.
It was a good thing that I did, you know. And look what happened. Be good to everyone because, you know, you might meet them and they're in a band. But Kiss are a weird one. I'm not sure anyone is as disappointed at being a fan of a band as Kiss fans are when they're kids and Kiss is everything, and then you get older and you start realizing that it's just quite a horrible drama.
And now in the world we're in as well, where, you know, the things that Gene says don't really sort of fit in with way things are going, do they, in terms of his, I guess, lack of sympathy for mental health issues being the main one. I think he gets a bad rep with some of the sexist stuff, because it's like, at least he's always said, I'm a bit of a fucking sexual guy. Do you know what I mean? He's never been a deviant or a...
It's not just him. Well, I mean, yeah, well, he was married to someone, then openly, you know, fucking around, and that was a... No, he was going up with Sharon... What's she called? Sharon Tweed or something, she's called, his wife. You know, lovely, you know, beautiful woman. And kind of priding himself on telling everyone that he was fucking around behind her back. I'm like, there's not going to be an age where that's going to be cool.
You know?
Even if people think it's cool, if some people think it's cool, it's not. You're wrong. It's fucking stupid and it's insulting and it's demeaning to someone that you should be bigging up and making feel good. But it wasn't just seeing Gene Simmons and his horrible, misdirected, misinformed opinions on Robin Williams. And even worse, Robin Williams' kids he brought into it. Robin Williams' kids are going to remember him as being a coward or something, he said.
Yeah, brutal. He was actually just sick, though, right? He had a brain tumour. Wasn't that what happened with him? And he actually just decided, rather than letting my brain degrade to the point where I'm no longer a human, I'm going to take myself out. I think that was his choice, opposed to just I'm so low, I don't want to be here anymore. I think, from what I've read and heard.
No one knows. No one knows. I mean, he used to talk about mental health issues a lot.
Yeah.
So, you know, either way, you know, some guy just took his life and it's really...
Well, there's been far too much of it, hasn't there, recently? Like, Keith Flint was a shocker.
But... Like I said before, you know, people haven't got... The system's broke. There's no treatment. There's no treatment available. You know, we're talking about people that have got enough money to see the best doctors in the world. But the best doctors in the world, A, aren't there, or B, are there, but they don't know what the hell they're talking about. Then they're not helping you. All they're doing is getting you out of the office with a new script. There you go. Something new to try.
Well, that's what happened to my mum for the best part of my adult life. She's been bipolar since I was about six. So I've grown up with the sort of lack of any knowledge of mental health. And she must have been on about 8 or 9 different prescription drugs over that time. And, you know, they invariably didn't work. She seems now to finally be on something that does keep her well. And she hasn't had any sort of trouble for about 8 years, which is the longest in as long as I can remember. But
I hope so.
You know, there's far too much cowboy guesswork, isn't there?
It's outrageous. It's outrageous. I've been going round in circles for the best part of 2 years trying to get seen and just white knuckling it because I've got kids. You know, when the private sector can't do anything for you, you're like, I get it now. I get it why so many people are, you know, all you've got, all you're given from the world of medicine is an idea or hope. If they're not all right yet, they're going to be all right. People know what they're talking about. And then when they strip that hope away from you, you're on your own. You're floating in space. You're fucked. And some people make it and some people don't. But that's why there's 6,000 people killing themselves, not because the illness is untreatable. You know, there's so many more things that could be done. And it's outrageous. In this day and age, people don't need to suffer. You know, but the rise in financial interest compared to the fact that as a species we don't look after each other, the future looks a bit fucking grim, you know. So thank God for music, really.
Is that your salvation? Would you say that that's been what's kept you here?
No, my kids.
Your family?
Yeah, my kids have kept me here, without a doubt. And you know, having a community like the Wild Arts community, who, you know, do discuss things like this, you know, it's a bit like a support group as well.
Yeah,
where we discuss things like mental health illnesses, where you can't really even bring the topic up in normal circumstances. You know, everyone's quite open about it now, and I think knowing that you're doing something with your music that's having a direct effect on people, that people tell you that not only that album, that song, that part of the song, you know,
that lyric or
that
word,
lyric, and you're just like, and I knew that lyric was a good one, you know. I knew someone somewhere would get that. And you realise you're doing something more than making music. And I'm not trying to, you know, blow smoke up anyone's arse, but you're not just trying to chase, you know, some financial dream. It's social. You're doing something that affects people that believe in you. And at that point, you're more of a reporter on the human condition than a songwriter. Or a songwriter for famous people who are just singing banal lyrics about nothing.
Yeah.
And, you know, it makes the whole process a bit more important. You know, you can't really look at it as, you know, I'm not doing as good business as him. I'm doing a different business than him. You know, and that's what you got to remember at all times. It's very important, but, you know, It wouldn't necessarily keep me here. And I think a lot of people would understand if I just gave up, I got tired and just went, oh, I can't do anymore. But my kid wouldn't. You know, I've got three kids and God knows one of them might follow me down that path, you know, and just say, well, that's what Dad did. I've got a similar pain and that's what Dad did. So I might just do that. And if I stick around, then that's what Dad did. So I'll stick around and hope for a legitimate terminal illness to take me out.
do you kind of do any form of therapy yourself? Do you see a professional and talk to anyone?
I tried doing the NHS. I just moved to York and I tried to do it with the York mental health teams and crisis and response teams. There's something like 30 mental health charities in York and no one knows who they are. It's a ridiculous situation. But I tried my best. And then I went back to where my family live, St. Helens, where my ex-partner and my child live. And I got so desperate, I went back to my old doctor that I didn't even think was very good at the time, just for someone would see me. Someone who could write me a script would see me and just help in some way. And, you know, it made me realise that you can't rely on the system. You can't rely on people helping. You've got to develop your own skills, sharpen your own skills, survival skills. And we're talking absolute survival skills. How do you get to bedtime without hanging yourself? And some days are fucking much worse than others. But as long as you get to bedtime, you've cracked it.
I guess it's noticing when you pick up on negative thoughts, right, and trying to nip them in the bud. Early on, is that one tactic?
And that's.
Or would
one,
you say it's different for every individual?
It's different for every individual. I mean, that's one way that the illness will manifest. Other times, someone's just been on the phone to their wife and say, "Oh, you know, the dinner's on, kettle's on," and then the wife comes back and they've already hung themselves and the dinner's still in the oven and the kettle's still warm. And he had a flash of inspiration that took them out within probably 10, 15 minutes. No one saw that coming. And then for other people, it's more of a long lasting, festering kind of effect. It's such a weird illness. It's such a strange illness. But it's as unique as people's fingerprints. Yeah. It really is.
And I think the hardest thing is getting yourself out of your own head, isn't it, sometimes, and just seeing a different perspective. Because very often perspective is
distractions is everything. Are essential. You know, having a dog really does help, you know, because dogs, my dog is telepathic. You know, when no one knows there's anything up with me, my dog knows, you know, and she'll come up and she'll do these little movements with her head or her paws and stuff, and she's going like, it's going to be all right, come on, we're going to be okay. And that's a great distraction. So then being able to take her for a long walk is another great distraction.
Have you seen Afterlife?
Yeah, absolutely.
That's a powerful piece of comedy and drama, isn't it? It's brilliant.
He seems genuinely blown away by the response to that.
Yeah.
But he's popular because he's outrageous, but he's not loved because he's outrageous. I think he's finally twigging the difference.
Yes.
People love him because he's touched on something that was such a delicate subject matter. The possibility of getting it wrong, especially with someone like Ricky Gervais. Because Ricky Gervais has said some awful things about depression on stage, but it's almost like he had a flash, or he met a few people that suffered from it, or did a bit of research or something. But he seems to have kind of developed more of a heart.
Yeah.
And that's what's going to make him a legend, not because he can upset celebrities.
He's very good at that, though.
I like that. You know, I like him, and I like when he says things I don't like. That's the art of every great comedian.
Well, I think he's very much of the opinion that whatever you stay on stage as part of the routine is a joke, and it's not what you mean or feel. It's just to elicit a response.
Yeah, I think that's a bit of a stock line for him, because it's like it's a joke if it's funny. Otherwise, it's just an offensive thing to say.
Yeah.
And when he's talked about depression, there's no humour in that. He hasn't lightened it with a punchline at the end. He's got his thing over. And I suppose, you know, people who are overweight and got thyroid problems probably think the same when he's talking about
people. He goes after fat people a lot, doesn't he?
Yeah. But I mean, it's his thing. And again, it's like every comedian I've ever loved says things you go, oh, that's what makes you love him. You know, but the fact that someone like him could turn around then and do something as sympathetic as Afterlife, I think shows a maturity and an exciting, potentially exciting career, even more exciting than just offending a load of people, which it's good enough.
Yeah.
But to be able to do things that actually have a resonance with people, I think it's very clever. And I think he's probably agrees.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
What's your relationship with religion? What are your feelings and thoughts towards the topic?
The same as any rational person, I suppose. It's everyone's born with a hole inside of them, whatever, however big it is, or you know, and they're just, it's about filling that hole, whether you're filling it with vodka or filling it with God or filling it with, you know, whatever, chocolate and Netflix. It's, you know, you're still filling a void. You know, that's, again, part of the human condition. We have we have a sense of loss because we're not a species. We don't interact like a species, like the rest of the world, the rest of the animal kingdoms. Everything they do is a reaction on the procreation and benefit of the species. Ours is like...
the greater good, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Ours is like, we kind of like messing around with mortality and, you know, for few... I mean, look at the way we are. Look at the way the whole Brexit thing's played out. And everyone, you know, I certainly don't want to go down a political kind of cul-de-sac, but the fact that the people that vote Leave saw it as some kind of competition, like football, you lost, get used to it. And like, what did you win? Doesn't matter, you didn't win it. Doesn't matter what I've won. I might not have won anything, but I won. And like, you don't even know the sport, you don't even know what you've won. You might have won 10 years of fucking misery. Is that all right? Yeah, as long as you didn't win.
As long as it's on my terms, it's like biting your nose off to spite your face, isn't it?
And it's illustrated the inherent ugliness of the human species that differentiates from everything else that's walking, climbing, breathing, swimming, whatever the fuck they're doing. Every other animal is not out to fuck its own species. It's fucking madness to fuck your own species, and we do it all the time. We go against the grain all the time. So it's not a massive leap of logic that there wouldn't be the treatment there for something like mental illness when it doesn't manifest itself as big sores and weeping boils. You could be making it up.
Yeah.
So the suspicious nature of human beings are going like, well, I don't even know if you're telling the truth. It doesn't look like there's anything wrong with you. You know, until you're swinging off a rope and think, oh, he meant it.
Yeah, and then it's too late.
You know, and obviously it's too late.
What can we do to be more sympathetic as a species, do you think, Ginger?
I'm not sure it's even worth... I think it now's the time to stop fantasising and build some real, proper, sensible building blocks for your future, for your survival. And if it is going to be, you know, every man for himself, then you've got to, you know, if you like the idea of there being good in the world, be good, you know, and that's got to be enough. You can't expect the world to be good, or it can't disappoint you that the world doesn't want to behave in a moral kind of fashion. You've got to do it for yourself, and you've got to survive for yourself, and just don't be a cunt, because it's easy and there's too many of them.
There is too many of them.
Oh, it's infuriating. So many cons. You know what? They're never the ones that fucking die young, are they?
What's that song, Only the Good Die Young? Who does that? I can't remember. But they were onto something.
There's something in it.
When I saw you doing the Songs and Words tour, I think you even did either top three or maybe even top five near-death experiences. Was it top five?
I had to cut that one out. That was ridiculous. That set was so long. I had to cut bits out. I didn't think I could actually make it work for like, what do you say for more than an hour? And then we'll find out. You've talked too long. You've actually got to cut it back.
So what was the top one?
I think the top one was...
Because they got kind of increasingly insane and bizarre, didn't they, as they went down. What would be the most bizarre for anybody who didn't catch that tour?
I don't remember all five of them. One of them was going over the side of a mountain on a motorbike into some sand, and the sand, you know, unless you're an expert rider, which I wasn't, the sand just tells you where you're going to go. And it was in Portugal. There was this huge cliff, and the sand was just going, you're going over the cliff, and I've got no skills. And it just, no, you're not. We'll put you back on the road. And the bike rode itself. And, you know, as a standalone story, it doesn't really...
Was that your ass? No. Wow. In response to the story.
It was a ghost of a fraud. And my second motorbike one was, I was in Thailand and I just got this bike that was way bigger than I was used to riding. So I flicked the throttle and he just motored across this three-lane carriageway, three lanes each direction. With the traffic going, the traffic's all like bombing around. And in Thailand, there's no fast lane or slowly. It's just everyone's just
free for
bombing
all.
Around. And it missed everyone else and then went over the middle barrier, the middle hump, and then went over the traffic going the other way. And I'm like, I'm definitely dead this time. And I missed all three lanes. And then I was just like, it's ridiculous. And then I was going, I found myself driving up this street with a huge truck coming towards me and going, this is definitely going. And the bike pulled itself around and flipped back into the traffic, the direction of the traffic. And everyone that was with me was going, that is some serious skills you got on the bike. And I'm like, there was no skill. That was complete fluke. That was a weird one. I've got loads of little things like that. That I just like, if you sit and think of one of them, you just go, oh, it was just fluke. But, you know.
And there was a bunch of ghost stories as well, wasn't there? And experiences with the unknown, the supernatural.
Yeah, well,
you were saying in a recording studio at one point, you were making, I can't remember which record it was, but you were saying there was basically spirit in the studio.
Well, there's been a few. that one was...
was it the country record you were
doing? Valor del Corazon. No, it was my first solo album. It was in Texas.
Yeah, that was it.
And there was there was loads of weird activity going on, and just, you know, we'd been partying quite hard. So we'd been away for about 3 days and we could have been imagining it until... This great local pianist called Buzz Osborne, real big player in the scene.
Not from the Melvins.
No, not that one.
That would have been bizarre.
I know. And he said, "Have you met Bucky the Ghost?" And we were like, "Fuck off! How did you know what was going on in the studio? This like way before you got here." He's like, "No, if it's a good session, which this one seems like it is, then he'll show his face, or you'll know he's here." And I'm like, "I think he already has." And he was just like, oh, that's good. That's like the most average, mundane, run-of-the-mill thing in the world. Yeah, he showed up. That's good. I'm glad he showed up. We're just like... But with the Wild Arts did it. We were recording in Ridge Farm when we first started. And there was these barn doors in the kitchen. And someone walked past the barn doors. And I just figured there was another door out the side. So we're just like, what the fuck was that? Walking through the kitchen, ran up the barn doors to look where the other door was, and there was no other door. And we all saw it. I don't know. That whole thing is like, I don't know. We all want to believe in magic, don't we?
I think we all want to believe also in that there's something else after this, right? That there's a grander thing than the here and the now.
Yeah, or there's some kind of design or a I don't know.
Do you believe in it all?
No.
No?
Of course not. It's a lot.
What do you think happens after we leave this mortal coil?
No idea. End. But you know, we are made up of energy, and energy doesn't die. You know, so presumably we go, and our energy goes and does something else that involves energy. I mean, the thing is, you look at you zoom into a human body, and you look at the neurons, and you know, nerve endings, and it just looks like stars. Look in the sky, you just go like, well, chances are it's just a bigger picture than what all we're doing is feeding information to a bigger thing, like, you know, your whatever little fellas are in your knee taking care of some war in your knee.
Yeah, so we're like the blood cells inside a big giant.
But not even a giant, it's just like a not an intelligence, because that would suggest some kind of design, but I used to be able to talk about this sort of stuff for a long time, and then I just got just listening to myself and just going, I'm not buying that anymore.
No.
You've just been splurring the same crap all for years and years. And I start buying it, and then I start, you know, we did an album where we went to the most haunted castle in Europe and did the vocals in this old castle. And nothing, not a single thing. A few people said, oh, I felt something, but nothing, not a single thing. We had cameras everywhere. You know, I slept in the most haunted bedroom that wasn't even open to the public. It was supposed to be that terrifying, and nothing, not a single thing. So now when I wake up in the middle of the night, I used to wake up and think, oh, you know, that noise could have been something. And I was just like, boys.
Not a chance.
You know, and I don't feel any, you know, don't feel anxious or excited or anything by noises. It just doesn't affect me anymore. And I hate the fact that I lost that kind of the magic, you know, the belief that there could be something else.
Why do you think you did?
Just looking for it, just wanting proof or wanting reassurance.
Yeah.
Just, you know, something. And I've done tons of things like that, just, you know, trying to go to places that are renowned for some kind of, you know, psychic activity or paranormal activity or anything. And just and getting nothing and thinking, like, you can probably make anything happen if you want it to happen bad enough.
Doesn't power of suggestion, right?
And yeah.
What role is drugs playing in your life at the moment? The illegal kind?
You can't ask people that question.
You can't, no. Because I think that it's obviously, you know, front and centre in the story of the Wild Hearts. At times, different now.
I never really got on with weed. It used to make me paranoid, and
I'm the same with weed, yeah. Yeah. Parijuana, I call it.
Yeah.
It fucks me up.
And it's a real love-hate thing, you know? But recently, since I've been getting really desperate about, like, well, I need some treatment from somewhere, I need something to get me over the hump so I can start believing in a solution, I've started smoking weed again. And it really has been helping, like 100%. It helps every time, to the point where everyone I knew used to go, don't smoke weed, don't smoke any more weed. You turn into a tit when you smoke weed. Or all going, maybe just go upstairs and have a smoke. You'd be better. And I'm like, I can see the, you know, the
positive the effects it's having.
Yeah.
A lot of my friends do that CBD oil. Obviously, that doesn't have the THC in, like the psychoactive component, but they say that CBD oil is amazing for all kinds of things, from like muscle pains to anxiety to all sorts of stuff. Apparently the medicinal qualities of that are sort of proven and celebrated.
Yeah, well, I bought a MediPen, they're called, and that's full of CBD oil,
right?
And and you know, for a while it was working, you know, the power of suggestion being as much as anything, but it worked for a bit. But it stopped working. And that was the thing that, you know, power of suggestion get you so far, but it's not going to help you in the future. And weed, you know, I've always been curious. I'd love to be one of these guys who wakes and bakes and just smokes all day.
And can actually get shit done.
Yeah, Snoop. I'd love to be like Snoop, you know, Willie Nelson. Who wouldn't?
Yeah.
But these days it's almost like I can see why this thing was put here. I can see why it grows out the ground for people who are, you know, presumably mental health issues isn't a modern thing. It's been going for as long as things have been growing out the ground, you know. And you have that one for this, and have that one for that, and that one. Oh, I'm feeling a bit melancholy. I'll have some of that.
What's your take on mushrooms? Are you a fan? Have you been a fan of them in the past?
Oh, I used to.
I love them
when I was a kid. But I've been trying to get a hold of some mushrooms because I read up a lot about microdosing.
Yeah, mushrooms.
And yep. I really wanted to get into it, and everyone I talked to about it was just on such a different wavelength. They were going, "Oh yeah, well you got to really trip and get through the trip." I'm like, "I don't want to trip, mate. I want to just."
That's
take...
not microdosing, by the sounds of it. Yeah,
just, absolutely not. I want something that just takes the intensity away and lets you function and think things through. Last thing I want to do in my life is start taking hallucinogens
and be tripping out.
Jesus
Christ. You ever tripped out on stage? I imagine that's probably the worst place to be when you're hallucinating.
Yeah, we've done everything on stage. Yeah. But
that's got to be one of the worst drugs to be on stage under, though.
Are they all equally damaging to
the show? You think the worst?
If you've had enough of it.
Oh,
if you're drunk and you're not in control, everything's going to shit. You're not playing with the band. You're not playing. I mean, you know, the Grateful Dead used to do mushrooms and arguably be better than they would be without them.
But
I mean, alcohol, I've seen so many people go on stage thinking the Billy Big Bollocks on, you know, swigging a bottle of Jack Daniels and just playing like an absolute twat.
Yeah.
And you're like, you've just let everyone down in the whole place, you know. That's not how you do it, you know. Have a celebratory drink afterwards and have a few drinks to limber up if you need to, but getting pissed and going on stage and that's what you're charging people money to watch. I've never agreed with that.
Who was doing that recently? Richie, what's his name? Richie Sambora, is it? from Bon Jovi, the old guitarist. Apparently, at that Stone Free festival, he got on stage like shit faced.
Not recently.
Yeah, like a year or so ago.
Oh, I thought he was getting that together. I'd hope that he was getting it together. So alcohol's a cruel one. You know, you can always get another bottle of whiskey. There's not many shops that are going to not serve you a bottle of whiskey, even if you're pissed. If you've got the money,
yeah,
it's still going to give it to you. You know, you can get yourself in a tremendous mess. And I've seen a lot of people, you know, I've lost a lot of friends to alcohol. And it's awful because no one steps in because everyone likes a drink.
Yep.
You know?
And it's the socially acceptable drug, isn't it?
Yeah, and usually the ones that don't seem like they've got a drink problem are the ones that die from it because it's just a constant, you know, drip effect where, you know, they're not giving their body any time to reconvene and get itself back to zero. So, you know, when they do get sick or something, the body's just too weak to deal with it. You know, it's too busy trying to fight off this alcohol bloat. And when it's got to go and, you know, work. And I've lost quite a few friends in that because of they being in an operating theatre and their internal organs are just packed up because the body's been too weak. They've been overweight. It's a bastard alcohol. You know, it's a cruel one, but you know, having said that, I still love a drink. I'm never going to be sober.
Would you say you have a healthy relationship with it at this stage in your life?
I'm trying to, because I like a drink.
Yeah,
I like a good wine. I like, you know, a good whiskey. I like, you know my favorite beers and stuff. And I'm not going to just drink to get pissed. I'm going to drink to enjoy it. And if you get pissed on the way, then hey, what you gonna do? But I mean, you know, for someone like me, hangovers are a
tell me about it, dude.
Danger, you know, that could be
in terms of where you go mentally as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I, you know, there's nothing good happening in my mind, in my mood, in my actions, in my manner. Nothing good happening if I've got a stinking hangover. I can't risk it.
Yeah,
you know, so I'd absolutely pointless going there. If I've got to fight off a few hangovers a year because it is an early night turned into a late night, that's just par for the course. You know, take a day off or whatever. But I used to have a hangover all the time.
Yeah. So you're constantly living in this state of anxiety and dread and misery.
I mean, for years and years, I'd never even drank water. I remember not drinking water in most of the 90s. And I wake up and a Jack and Coke was breakfast every day. And I'm like, well, that should be in my near-death stories because how the fuck can someone live like that for 10 years on bad food and alcohol and drugs and not drink any water or take any exercise? And look at me. I'm 54.
And here you are. You're looking in great shape,
I'm
mate.
I'm in great shape. I'm fit as a fiddle. Doesn't make any sense.
Life's good.
I've had so many examples of God stepping in that I really should believe in God, you know. I can't bring myself to do it. But, I mean, I've got a lot of examples in my life where I could go, and then God stepped in, and people would find it hard to argue, or at least my belief in it. But it's just, it's not, is it? It's not. That's not what it is. Are you religious yourself?
I'm not, no. I believe certainly that there's a higher power and a grander scheme, but I'm not sure if I subscribe to any of the major ones. There's little bits of each that I like. I'd like to learn and read more about all of them and try and just sort of take a bit from that. I think anything that makes you feel happier in yourself is a good thing, but also anything that makes you a bit more of a selfless, giving, generous person is also a good thing. And there's certain religions and religious people that I know that I see having a really positive effect on the world and the people around them. But then the flip side of that is there's also that dark side to it all, isn't there? And that hypocrisy and...
Well,
there's good and bad in everything, isn't there?
Yeah, but the good, the bad in the Catholic Church is worse than the bad in...
Biblical, excuse the pun. It's the greatest evil, isn't it? It's the root. But I guess now the new religion is capitalism, isn't it? And that is the new root of all evil.
It looks like it's going that way. But I mean, you know, capitalists won't cover themselves like the church did. I just can't see it lasting for thousands of years. Like the church has been able to screw kids for thousands of years and find not only anonymity, but people have been, you know, potential paedophiles or joining the church so they can mess with kids and
like being recruited almost, yeah. I'll tell you a story. When I was about four, there was maybe even younger than that, actually three. My mum wanted to have me christened because she was a Christian, and the vicar at our local village church said that he would do it if I came on like a walk with him one day so he could get to know me. And my mum, thank God, no pun intended, just went, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to leave you alone with my son. I don't know you that well. I don't care if you're a man of the cloth. And she didn't. And so God knows what he would have done.
Thank God you didn't have that mum from that kid from the Michael Jackson documentary. Right? Yeah, you take him out.
You take him, sleepovers, whatever you want.
For a week. You get him for a week.
I mean, that is the worst parenting of all time, isn't it? No matter who the person is, you should never let your child stay in a bed with a fully grown adult. Like, that is fucked up.
Well, who's not you? Yeah. Really.
So bad. Can we finish on the story about Debbie?
Fucking hell, yeah.
So I thought that'd be a nice, light-hearted, funny anecdote to leave people with. Is that cool?
Yeah, I don't know. I talked about it a lot on Songs of Words, but I don't know if I can remember much about it now. Test me.
Well, it was the whole the catfish.
Oh, it was the catfish incident. before catfish.
Yeah.
Well, it was.
You remember the details?
Not really. I just remember coming back from the States, and all of a sudden there was this thing called MySpace.
Yeah.
And I didn't even, I had no idea what MySpace was. It was just. Tons of it had been out for a while, but I had a couple of friends of mine dealing with my MySpace page, and I said, oh, let me have a look. And it was just tons and tons of people wanting to be my friend, a lot of which were gorgeous girls. And I'm like, I'll take over from here. And this one girl was turned out to be this Debbie. The girl in the photo obviously wasn't the girl who came over to visit me in England, but it was such an innocent time. It was such a brand new thing. There was no way of protecting yourself against that sort of stuff. You know, someone's going to go through with a bizarre, elaborate lie. There's no way of detecting that.
Because there's no precedent, is there? Like, you think, well, why would anyone do that? Because nothing like that had come before, had it? Mm. Obviously, fraud was a thing, but to that level where you're not really getting anything from it. You know, you're not getting money from someone. It's just to literally trick them.
But you're not tricking them because she looked obviously nothing like the girl in the pictures. Yeah. Where was the trick was obviously had a finite kind of a,
there's know, no there payoff. There's no ultimate payoff. Yeah,
you can see where it's going to come a cropper when the guy sees and go, you're not her. Yeah, I'm no, you're not that.
And she was like some kind of little old lady, right? Apparently,
well, she looked like one. She was just she's a weird little kind of. Goblin looking girl, but she presents herself every now and again on Instagram and stuff like that, and I know it's her because a spelling's atrocious. Yeah, it's a great way of spotting if someone is being kosher or not. A background stories are so synthetic and just don't hold up. But then again, I don't want to believe her. I wanted to believe her back then. I broke up with a partner and I was looking for, I was on the market for someone else. And this gorgeous, if it happened now, if you had someone get in touch with me on Facebook and sent me a load of pictures, I still would probably, there's a certain element would want to believe them. And then I could fall for it again and go, like, there was no way I could see that coming. Why would anyone have so many pictures of someone who wasn't them? People are freaking messed up.
They are. It's a strange and hilarious world, isn't it? As well as being a dark and depressing one, it's also
kind of
the gift that keeps on giving sometimes.
Sometimes.
You got to keep a positive spin, right?
Do you?
I think so. That's why we're still here, right?
The positive thing, I find that quite hard to maintain because it's too easy, too simple. You know, cheer up. I say sometimes you can't be positive.
Maybe not so much cheer up as more, as you were saying earlier, like knuckle down and persevere.
But I mean, that's just hard work.
Yeah.
The positivity comes when you get up the next morning and go like, I made it. But getting through it, I think asking people to be positive is a bit like, preparing them to fail. Because it's almost impossible to find positivity when there's not even common sense coming through. You're not even, your joy receptors are being cut off. You're not thinking like a rational person. And asking someone to, why don't you just feel positive or think positive is a bit like asking someone with a broken leg to run.
Go for a walk.
Yeah. And it's, You know, and the human mind, it's just so powerful. If it wants to change things around and make you believe something, it will. You know, and the worst person to fight with in the whole world is yourself, because you're there all the time. You're never going to give up. You're equally matched. You're absolutely perfect. You're like that fella, the chicken and the guy from Family Guy. You know what I mean? Just beating each other up year in, year out, and you can see why it would wear someone out. The availability of positivity is not always an option. But you know, you strive to feel some positivity because you know that it's important to find some joy. But I've been staying somewhat positive for decades now, and I'm finally getting kind of tired. You know, finally it's going like, maybe I'm struggling to find treatment because maybe there isn't any treatment. And I'll be the happiest guy in the world if I'm wrong. Same as ghosts and Gene Simmons. I'll be very, very happy if they all prove themselves to be. It was true, and they're all really nice. Yeah, very good.
There you go on that note. Well, congratulations on the new record, mate, and congratulations on weathering the storms with your brothers in arms. And you got some shows in May. You excited for them?
Oh, yeah. I'm always excited to get with the Wild Arts. Always excited. I'm so proud of the band. And it's great to be playing Wild Arts fans. I mean, it really is. You know, it's... Yeah. I'm not excited. I'm living for the shows.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns. Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.